This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The resignation of Alberto Gonzalez spawned considerable speculation about a successor and renewed discussion over what exactly it is that an attorney general does about his or her relations with Congress, and especially about relations with the White House. Are there times politics should play a role in formulating policies, for example, and other times personnel decisions say when it shouldn't? What qualities should we look for in the next attorney general? How do you prioritize independence, leadership, loyalty, political philosophy, and experience? What areas of enforcement should the next AG focus on? Terrorism, drugs, corruption, the mob, civil rights? Later in the program, the Larry Craig story takes center ring in our media circus segment. Why did it take so long for the story to get out? When is a politician's sexual orientation or activities news? If you want to weigh in, you can send us email now, talk@npr.org. But first, what makes a good attorney general? Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email talk@npr.org, and you can comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. We begin with Jamie Gorelick, now an attorney with WilmerHale. She served as Deputy Attorney General of the United States during the Clinton administration and joins us today by phone from her office here in Washington. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Happy to be here.
And what's the primary responsibility of the Attorney General of the United States?
The primary responsibility of the Attorney General of the United States is to be the voice for the rule of law and to ensure both the effective and impartial enforcement of the law and advise the president and the rest of his administration on the ways in which the actions that they take can conform to law and policy and the Constitution.
And how does the AG do that on a practical basis? What would an attorney general do on a normal day?
Oh, well, the attorney general's schedule on a normal day could vary enormously. There are many, many different constituencies that the attorney general needs to address, from law enforcement to the folks in the Bureau of Prisons to the 93 U.S. attorney's offices, who are the prosecutors all around the country, to the litigating divisions within the department, to the grant-making functions. It's a department of over 100,000 people. It's highly complex. It is not particularly hierarchical. People within the department are used to having access to the senior leadership of the department. When I was deputy AG, I had 30-some-odd direct reports plus the 93 U.S. attorneys.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's come under criticism in the most recent attorney general's tenure has been the extent of communications with the White House. Now, this is an executive agency. Isn't it legitimate to have relationships with the White House, the person also who appointed you?
Absolutely. The Department of Justice is part of the administration, and there is and should be communication on a whole range of issues between the White House and the Department of Justice. Where the Department of Justice differs from other cabinet-level agencies is that it is also the embodiment of the rule of law, and it has an obligation not to do just what the president wants, but also what is consistent with the laws and the Constitution of the United States. When we were in office, and frankly for decades before, there were rules that limited the discussion of enforcement matters, not how you, what position you might take on a piece of legislation. But when you're bringing to bear the full power of the United States to indict someone or to investigate someone or to sue someone, on those matters, we limited the number of people who could talk to each other about this to the Attorney General and the deputy and very few staff, two or three, on the one hand at the Justice Department, and the White House counsel and his or her deputy on the other. And the reason for that is that you don't want to have any kind of political influence on the outcome of the investigative and prosecutive and enforcement functions of the Department of Justice. The American people need to understand and believe that those powers are being exercised in an impartial way.
On the other hand, in terms of policy, if, say, a president runs on a tough-on-crime platform and gets elected, it's perfectly legitimate then for him to tell his attorney general, we're going to devote most resources to fighting crime as opposed to other priorities.
Absolutely. And even within fighting crime, you could say, it's very important for me that you prosecute gun cases or that you prosecute immigration cases. Certainly the priorities of administrations change, but what happened in this administration was that literally hundreds of people at the White House and at the Justice Department could talk to each other about the most sensitive issues, and one cannot maintain the kind of quality and sensitivity to the way in which the enforcement power should be handled if you do that.
Let's get a caller in on the conversation. And by the way, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. We're with Jamie Gorelick, former Deputy Attorney General of the United States. And let's talk with Steve. Steve calling us from St. Louis.
Hi. I think that it's incredibly important that the next Attorney General recognize that the great feature of our system of government is that in the division of powers, the executive branch enforces the laws and the legislative branch writes the laws. So the Attorney General is not just the attorney for the president or for the executive branch, but is tasked with enforcing the laws that the legislature has written. So, you know, certainly a person like Alberto Gonzalez, who was previously the counselor for the president, recognizes that division of responsibility. You know, if the president needs an attorney, he can hire one independently, but I just really question whether it's a good thing if we have a system where, as you were making the comment previously about enforcing immigration or other political decisions, those types of decisions need to be done pursuant to the law, and where voter fraud or immigration cases are being enforced in such a way that is politically palpable instead of pursuant to the law, that's a problem.
Jamie Gorelick, what do you think?
Well, I agree with the caller that the Attorney General is not the lawyer who is simply pressing the president's position without regard to what the law as written by Congress says, and that is absolutely critical. The distinction I was trying to make was that certainly a president can have priorities, can say I'm much more interested in pornography than I am in pornography prosecutions than I am in securities prosecutions. But the Department of Justice may not prosecute cases, investigate cases that are politically motivated. And so, for example, it is critically important that the next Attorney General ensure that the public integrity lawyers in the department, and those are the people who prosecute and investigate election fraud, for example, abide by the practices of prior generations of lawyers, that the career people who are the sort of keepers of the faith are brought into the conversation, that indictments are not brought on the eve of elections, investigations are not announced on the eve of elections to affect them. The caller is absolutely right in that regard.
Okay, Steve, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Joining us now is Doug Kamek, who served as Assistant Attorney General under President Reagan and the first President Bush. He's currently Chair and Professor of Constitutional Law at Pepperdine University and joins us today from studios at Pepperdine in Malibu, California. And nice to have you back on the program, Doug Kamek.
Neil, good to be with you.
And what makes a good Attorney General as we look for a successor for Alberto Gonzalez? What qualities should we emphasize?
Well, Jamie Gorelick has highlighted, I think, the key piece for the next Attorney General in particular, and that is that the Department of Justice makes decisions based on evidence, not based on favoritism or whether one is a Republican or a Democrat. That message has to be underscored time and time again. In terms of the particular qualities, this is an opportunity for the Department to find a person of unimpeachable integrity, leadership in the profession, and I would think that could come out of any aspect of the profession, Neil, whether it be the practice or the academy or from the bench. In fact, I think one of the best models that has been singled out has been to single out former Dean Edward Levy of the University of Chicago Law School, but I, in part because he was perceived as someone who was an honest broker who was above partisanship.
And who came in also, to fix a terrible situation.
He came in post-Watergate to deal with profound demoralized personnel as well as ethics difficulties. One could reach out to the bench, to the federal bench. Federal judges have enormous experience with federal practice and have been, by virtue of their judicial oath, above partisanship.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we're looking for somebody who's a leader, who's going to be able to convey the message that Jamie mentioned, that this is the rule of law that matters, not friendship, not favoritism, and has the capacity to inspire.
And I wanted to ask you also to weigh in on that line, you know, where is politics appropriate, where is politics not appropriate?
Well, politics in a general sense is appropriate in terms of the setting of overall priorities, but I think your caller was right that the president here does not have a free hand. The president must to be very careful to be following the priorities that have been established through the democratic process. The Constitution requires that the president take care that the laws are faithfully executed, and it's the Attorney General who is the primary actor for having that enforcement pursued. And one of the very first things I think the new Attorney General has to do is meet with the 93 U.S. attorneys and to remind them how important they are as the first string, the varsity of the Department of Justice, and in fact to make reference, I would say, to a speech that Robert Jackson made back in 1940 where he said it would be an unusual and rare instance in which a U.S. attorney would be superseded in the handling of litigation except in the context of requests for help and assistance from Washington. Washington ought not to be micromanaging the litigation efforts of the department, and they ought to be following the priorities set by the Congress of the United States.
And you probably hear the room exhale at that point. Stay with us, if you would, Doug Kamek, also Jamie Gorelick, both of whom served in the Justice Department at various times. We're talking about what makes a good attorney general. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. In a few moments, a former attorney in the Justice Department will join us on the qualities that he thinks would help turn things around at the department. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Later this hour, the making of a Senate sex scandal, how Larry Craig's arrest went under the radar for so long. David Folkenflik will join us for another edition of the Media Circus. Right now, what makes a good attorney general? Alberto Gonzalez steps down on September 17th. There is no shortage of advice for President Bush on what sort of AG to nominate. What are the qualities you want in an attorney general? What issues should he or she focus on? How much politics should play a role in the job? 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Our guests are Jamie Gorelick, who served as Deputy Attorney General in the Clinton administration, later a member of the 9/11 Commission, and Doug Kamek, Chair and Professor of Constitutional Law at Pepperdine University, who served as Assistant Attorney General for President Reagan and the first President Bush. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And let's go to Gus. Gus is with us from Berkeley, California.
There we go. Thank you. Doug Kamek, boy, what a wonderful summary you just made. As a layperson, all I could add to this is that we are, at least in prospect, a society of laws, not just of men. And I think the biggest danger is the total subversion or just rank ignorance or rejection of the law, as we've seen, at least I contend, in this recent administration. When the administration is able to place buddies, in a sense, inside the Attorney General's office, and then, if things don't seem to go the way they should, can, for political motivation alone, rank, banal, greed, whatever, flush people with great integrity out of the office, I say that is, we're on the precipice right there. So I'll leave my comments standing and look forward to your answer. Thank you.
Okay, Gus. And I just wanted to put his remarks in some context. This administration is hardly the first to install a friend to the president in the job of Attorney General of the United States. We think of Robert Kennedy, who served his brother as Attorney General of the United States, and John Mitchell, Richard Nixon's campaign manager, who served as Attorney General of the United States, just to name a few. But that said, Jamie Gorelick, I wonder what you think.
I don't think being a friend in and of itself is a disqualification. Frankly, I think Bobby Kennedy was one of the great attorneys general. But I do think it, the Attorney General and his or her staff have to be people who have relevant experience, who understand the special role, as Doug has so well described it, of the Department of Justice, who understand their particular roles. And that's important for several reasons. One, it's not obvious to people who have not had experience with the Department of Justice how special it is and why it is important that you not act like a political operative placed, say, in the Commerce Department or another department that doesn't have the demands of independence and fealty to the rule of law.
Hmm.
It's also important because the great strength of the Department of Justice is in its highly experienced core of career professionals. There's a relatively thin veneer of political people at the top of the department or spread around in the bureaucracy. The department depends on the experience and wisdom of the career people. If that relationship isn't seamless, if there is no respect between the political appointees and the career lawyers, that wisdom is lost, that judgment is lost, and the department becomes politicized. So I would say that both for the good of the administration of justice and for the way in which the various people who need to work together do so, it's critically important that the individuals have experience, have stature, and not be folks plucked out of political ranks simply to do someone's bidding within the Department of Justice.
Just another advisory. I don't think Robert Kennedy's experience before he was appointed Attorney General might have qualified him for that job had he not been the president's brother. But anyway, let's focus on what issues the department ought to focus on under the next Attorney General when that starts to happen, I guess, on the 17th. And I did want to bring in another voice into the conversation, one of those professionals that Jamie Gorelick was just talking about. This is Daniel Metcalf, a former attorney at justice who retired in 2007 and is now a law professor at American University's Washington College of Law and executive director of the Center for Government Secrecy. He's with us here in Washington, Studio 3A. Thanks very much for being with us.
Pleased to be with you, Neil.
And of all the tasks facing the next Attorney General, what issues do you think he should focus on, Daniel Metcalf?
Well, when it comes to substantive issues, I think it would be well advised for him or her to focus on what have been the most controversial ones during the tenure of Attorney General Gonzalez. Obviously, that would include detention, torture, detainee-related issues, government wiretap authority, surveillance authority, just to use that generic term.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the new Attorney General would be well advised to start from the premise that there's a lot of uncertainty or lack of clarity in the air in the minds of the American people, because Attorney General Gonzalez really was sort of a master of blithe obfuscation. There wasn't much clarity to what he would say, and even when he would say he couldn't say anything, it wasn't clear why he couldn't say anything. So that's something that has to be turned around. The more that the new Attorney General can focus with clarity and precision on the issues that are of American concern to the American people, the better. And by that I mean to say not just talking to the American public, but also being more clear and specific with Congress. I think Senators Leahy and Specter would appreciate that very much.
Mm-hmm. The chairman and the ranking member on the Senate Judiciary Committee. Let me turn to you, Doug Kamek. What issues do you think the next Attorney General should focus on?
Well, he's got a nuts and bolts issue right at the beginning, and that is he's got to help fill the top spots in the department that are virtually all vacant. He has to take full advantage of folks like Mr. Metcalf in terms of identifying the substantive issues, but I think Mr. Metcalf has done a nice job of outlining what they are. Terrorism has to be number one. We've dealt with this issue in kind of fits and starts in a piecemeal way. We're still not sure whether we're prosecuting this as a crime or whether we're fighting a war on terror and we're detaining enemy combatants. The Attorney General has to lead on that subject and make sure that we've got a unified approach to handling this terror threat that's going forward indefinitely, apparently. Beyond that, there are a large number of domestic matters, whether it be violent crime, civil rights, drug cases, the protection of intellectual property, identity theft, all of which are just crying out for attention. And I think the next Attorney General has to deal with those.
And Jamie Gorelick, I certainly want your thoughts on this.
One problem that the Attorney General will have is that people like Mr. Metcalf have left. The senior ranks of Justice Department officials has hemorrhaged. The career folks have voted with their feet. While many, many are still there, there are many who have left. So gaps need to be filled. Obviously, as Doug said, you have to fill the ranks of the political appointees. And I would just say that when Bobby Kennedy was appointed, he knew that he didn't have all of the experience he needed, and he appointed Jack Miller, who was a Republican, to head the criminal division. He appointed folks like Lou Oberdorfer and John Douglas, the most experienced people he could find, who were widely regarded and widely respected so that their decisions would have credibility. I agree with both of my colleagues on this call that the issues underlying our approach to counterterrorism policies need to be aired, but they need to be aired and reviewed with Congress. These are the most sensitive issues that the Department of Justice deals with, and the voice of the people has not been heard. And I think when you're balancing security and liberty, Congress has to be part of that conversation, and the comedy with Congress has just not been there. Hmm. Finally, Doug mentions crime. For the first time in well over a decade, violent crime is rising in this country. And it's rising in part because we abandoned the policy of helping communities put cops on the beat. And we have left many, many key prosecutorial positions in our communities at the federal level vacant. That is, they're on the books, but they are not funded and there are no people in them. And I think this is we are at a point where if we don't do something, gang crime, battery, rape, murder will increase in this country. So that is one of the fundamental jobs of the Department of Justice, which has been neglected.
Daniel Metcalf, let me ask you, was Jamie Gorelick right when she talks about hollowed out ranks at the Department of Justice amongst the career professionals like yourself? You retired earlier this year.
I fear that she is. It's certainly the case at the political top rank level. You could count the number of people who have left by using both hands and then starting to take off your shoes. At the career level as well, I think it's also true, less so, to be sure. Frankly, it largely depends upon an age consideration, whether someone is, like me, fortunate enough to have started so young to be minimally eligible to retire. I turned 55 right at the end of last year. My timing was somewhat exquisite in that respect. But I think the deeper point, and one that builds very much on what former Deputy Attorney General Gorelick pointed out, is that there's a tremendous morale problem there. People asked me when I left in January whether morale amongst the career ranks at the department was lower or still higher than at the time of Watergate. I was fortunate enough to be a young law clerk in the Attorney General's office in 1973 and then 74. At the time of the Saturday Night Massacre, I saw former Senator Saxby come in as a replacement Attorney General before Attorney General Leavy arrived in January of 75. And in January of this year, I said that I still didn't think morale was quite that low. Well, by July of this year, certainly after Attorney General Gonzalez's second disastrous appearance before the Senate Judiciary Committee, I don't think there was any reasonable doubt that the morale of the department amongst the career people and perhaps the political people as well, as measured by their voting with their feet, had reached lower than Watergate level depths. Mm. So I would add to the task at hand, the tasks that have been mentioned thus far, not just a matter of filling the positions, but is staunching the flow, especially amongst the career people. The new attorney should talk to the department employees directly, and I would strongly recommend that he or she acknowledge what has happened, acknowledge that things have to be turned around, and tell the department employees that things are going to get better. They will be proud to work for the Department of Justice again, so that things could turn around as they did under the tenure of Attorney General Levy.
Daniel Metcalf served as an attorney under 13 different attorneys general. Also with us, Doug Kamek, who served as assistant attorney general under President Ronald Reagan and the first President Bush, and Jamie Gorelick, deputy attorney general of the United States during the Clinton administration. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. Email is talk@npr.org. And this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on. This is Bob. Bob with us from Kings Beach in California.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
It's a nice segue into my question. Wouldn't the Department of Justice be better served to be part of the under the guidance of the judicial branch as opposed to the executive or legislative?
Doug Kamek, you're a professor of constitutional law. Why don't you help us out here?
Bob, it's a good question, but there's important reasons as to why it's not. James Madison told us that the key to avoiding tyranny and oppression in our country is to make sure that the powers are separated so that the same person who legislates doesn't enforce and the same person who interprets doesn't enforce. And so we have to be careful to keep those separate. But your question nevertheless can be a good reminder that by going to the federal bench, to the judiciary, to pick somebody who's been above politics, we would be signaling something very important. And I think it matches well with Dan's sentiment just a moment ago, because while I agree, Neil, that it's the president has latitude to appoint anybody he wants, a friend, a compatriot, a close colleague, at this point, the most important message is merit. And it's merit not just in terms of the leadership positions, but it's merit throughout the department, and to banish the notion that people are getting these jobs merely as a matter of patronage or friendship.
Mm-hmm. Bob, thanks for the call. Jamie Gorelick, federal judges, yes, above politics. Some people would also say above compromise. Where do you think the president ought to look for the next attorney general?
I think a judge who has had experience at or with the department would be a good idea. I mean, a Bill Webster type of person would be a good idea.
So William Webster, served as a head of the FBI.
Head of the FBI, head of the CIA,
yes.
and as a judge. You know, the only concern I have about a judge per se is that I feel it's very important at this stage for someone to know the department, because he or she will only have a brief period of time in which to begin the repair work that needs to be done.
Daniel Metcalf, what do you think?
Well, I have to agree completely that someone who knows the department would be the best choice, and I'd like to think I say that not just as a department alum, as Doug and Jamie are as well. I think personally, if you want to get into a name, the best choice, or certainly a sterling choice, would be former Deputy Attorney General Larry Thompson. Mm. Former deputies attorney general should be the first place that one would look for attorneys general, and I would say that whether Jamie Gorelick was on the phone with me or not. It would be wonderful if he could be persuaded to come back to Washington and apply the experience that he developed at the beginning of the Bush administration. And I think he's someone who would be accepted not only by the American public because of his stature and experience, but also readily accepted by Congress. And that's, I think, a very important part of this process. Obviously, any nomination has to be viewed through the lens of the confirmation process.
And I wanted to finish up there. Just for a moment, let me appoint Doug Kamek and Jamie Gorelick to the Senate Judiciary Committee. And if you could ask one question, Jamie Gorelick, what would it be?
Oh, boy, that is a tough one. Hey, Doug, you go first.
Doug Kamek, you go first.
Well, I think since terrorism is at the top of the list, I would ask what type of comprehensive approach the Department of Justice would be taking toward terrorism, and whether the new attorney general would have a prosecutorial model, or whether he thinks, as Judge Mukasey or former Judge Mukasey has written, that we need a specialized national security court. And along with that question, in light of the fact that the FISA statute, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Statute, has been recently amended, how we're going to be assured that FISA is properly applied going forward.
Jamie, good question. Jamie Gorelick, what do you think?
I would ask a question or series of questions designed to get at whether the nominee understands that the Justice Department needs to be the voice for the rule of law in the president's deliberations and provide an honest appraisal of applicable law, even if the advice will constrain the administration's pursuit of desired policies.
Jamie Gorelick, the former Deputy Attorney General of the United States, and currently with us from her office here in Washington, D.C. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Doug Kamek, Chair and Professor of Constitutional Law at Pepperdine, served in the Justice Department under Presidents Reagan and Bush. Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
And Daniel Metcalf, thanks very much. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.